tout.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us one of the great champions of freedom here in the state of California. Her name is D.V. Kidd, and D.V. is a prolific writer. She's put out a booklet on the Federal Reserve System. How many copies of that did you get out before you retired, D.V.?
The bankrupt America was 1,500,000+.
So you're probably one of the best read authors in the nation.
Well, you wouldn't know it by the New York Times. They never listed either one of my books in my blind loyalty. I sold 700,000, which would have qualified for their bestseller list, huh?
Well, don't feel bad. I mean, poor John Stormer, I think, had 7.5 million copies of his book, Then Dare Call It Treason.
Right.
And they never mentioned that. Gary Allen had 10 million copies of None Dare Call It Conspiracy, and he didn't even get the favorable mention there. I got a little attack, but anybody who tells the truth can be expected to be ignored by the various outlets of the controlled media, whether they be on the right, like the New York Times, the Washington Post, or on the left, like the Wall Street Journal, which does such a good job, like the Pied Piper of Hamlet, of leading the children to their destruction. So the Wall Street Journal leads the conservatives to their disinformation, and they go right along with the establishment. Well, anyway, D.V. was going to talk this evening really about, what, do you want to talk about the ID cards? I know that's something you're concerned about.
Yeah, we have to stop the issuance of the cards, and the only way that that's going to happen, I myself am not going to accept one. I'm just waiting for the rain to stop, and it'll probably be sometime tomorrow afternoon. I'm going down to try to see Tom McClintock's assistant, and also I talked to the uncle of one of the state senators, and he's going to call his nephew to expect me to go over there to talk to them about the states themselves are also going to have to stand up for the citizenry. This is going to be another unfunded mandate that's going to cost the states buku bucks, not to mention trampling on the 10th Amendment and the state's right to issue their own driver's licenses. But if we don't stop this, I guarantee you that the next step will be a few years down the road, the federal mafia is going to come along and they're going to say, well, you know, the national ID, there's too many counterfeitings, and, you know, we really, you know, next, we need the biochips. That's next. That's going to come if this is allowed to be issued to people. I'm not going to take it. I've already talked to, you know, some constitutional attorneys, and we're going to challenge it in court.
All right. Well, let's for our listeners out there, I think that you need to explain to them what this is really all about, and why the federal government is mandating that the states now will issue more or less routine driver's licenses. They'll all have to be the same, and of course, basically, this will be like a national ID card. Is that right?
Yes, the so-called National Intelligence Reform Act, which is an oxymoron coming out of Congress, was passed by our Republican-controlled Congress on December the 7th, of all days, 2004. And in this bill, and specifically...
Hold that stuff right there.
Okay.
Well, our guest this evening is D.V. Kidd. We're talking about the National ID Card, and D.V. is pointing out that the Intelligence Reform Act was passed on December 7th of last year. Go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Right, and of course, Mr. Bush signed it in a heartbeat. But in this Intelligence Reform Act, the Department of Homeland Security is going to issue all driver's licenses that will be that have some sort of uniformity to them, and birth certificates that will force people to allegedly join the Social Security system. The provisions for this are in the subsections of that bill, of 7212 and 7211 of the bills. I'm trying to get the final text from Ron Paul's office. But before you're allowed to board any airplanes, you will be required to use a national ID card. And these national ID cards will have biometrics, supposedly for security purposes, that will have a huge database of all your personal information in it, which means if somebody steals it and they read it, then they've got everything to know about you. All your medical history, they have access to everything.
But I think really what's more concerning is that the federal government is collecting dossiers on every student.
Well, and first of all, this is grossly unconstitutional. There's nothing in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution that authorizes the Congress to take and force this type of action upon the citizens of the states, respectively. It is a violation of the 10th Amendment, just like the Lawrence versus Texas decision. And this is going to be a huge battle. But, you know, thousands of people have notified their congressional critters that they are not going to accept them. Go ahead and charge us with a violation of whatever you want to charge us with, and we'll go to court. But we are not going to accept these. We have to stop this national ID card.
Well, now, of course, Stevie, the rationale behind this, you know, is the fact that we need this to control illegal immigration. We need this so we can be sure you're not an Islamic terrorist. We've got to be able to, we're involved in this life and death struggle with these radical terrorists who want to destroy our nation and hate us because we're free. And this is how we're going to solve the problem, is giving every law-abiding citizen a national ID card.
Well, they can try to use whatever justification they want, the same as Congress tried to justify their gun-free school zones by saying, oh, well, we have, you know, all these school shootings. Of course, they didn't neglect to mention that every single school shooter, and I investigated all of them, all of the shooters except for one of them, Dylan Klebold, because I can't get his autopsy, it's sealed. He was the second shooter at Columbine. All those kids were on Prozac or Ritalin or Luvox.
Hold that thought for a moment. And you know, the other thing is, DB, that every one of those shooters violated the federal law by carrying a gun onto the college, to the school campus. Can you imagine every one of those kids was a criminal before they started shooting everybody else? And had somebody else had a gun, they might have been able to have stopped it. But
well,
since nobody else had a gun except the criminals, why then every school became a shooting gallery?
But the U.S. Supreme Court in 1995 in Lopez versus the United States, this was a gun case where this guy brought a gun to a, quote, gun-free zone under this federal law. And the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the law and said that Congress overstepped their legislative authority. They had no authority to legislate control of guns within a school zone within the states. So this driver's license is exactly the same. They have overstepped their legislative authority, and we're going to court.
Well, I congratulate you for it, and I think that the major thing that we have to do is get people to understand that these people, we're not fighting a war on terrorism. If we were fighting a war on terrorism, they would have tried to seal the border a long time ago and had marshals on every plane, and every airline pilot would have been armed, rather than the administration doing everything they could to block the arming of airline pilots, and every plane would have certainly decoys or means of avoiding if somebody had a surface-to-air missile firing at our planes. They know there's no war on terrorism. They know this whole thing has been made up. ever since we financed Osama bin Laden. In fact, there's a wonderful article in the latest Foreign Affairs magazine, January, February, published by America's invisible government, the Council on Foreign Relations, where a professor of history at Columbia University says there would be no Islamic terrorist movement if the United States hadn't financed it. And that's his words, and I think he's absolutely right. We financed it from its inception, and we backed Saudi Arabia to continue to finance it, and yet they're using that and the threat of Islamic terrorism to take away the freedom of the American people. I'm sure Osama bin Laden must be clapping his hands in glee.
Not only that, but it is ludicrous to say that pilots shouldn't be armed because they might accidentally shoot the gun off. The majority of commercial airline pilots come from the military. These are guys who fly, you know, war missions, who've had thousands and thousands of hours in the air. They are firearm proficient. It's just a weak excuse. This is all about control.
It's all about control. In fact, you know, one of the things that they have, as far as the pilots being armed, is that they have to keep at the, the box, they have to keep the gun in a box that is locked, at all times until the cabin door is locked. And once the cabin door is locked, then they can unlock the box and take the gun out. Now, if they have to get up and go to the bathroom and unlock the door, then they have to put the gun away, which means that they would be totally vulnerable at that time. What sort of madness is that?
Well, the other thing, too, and this is just a little bit off, but I still have a hard time believing that four or five terrorists with box cutters were able to overcome all these male passengers, and some of these guys that were on those planes were ex-military and had martial arts training and all kinds of stuff. It's hard for me to believe that they would be afraid of box cutters.
Well, I think that there's many unanswered questions about what happened that morning. You know, they say that you and I probably are sort of wackos because we believe there was a conspiracy.
Oh, no, we're traitors. That's what people like you and me are called, for asking reasonable questions.
But, you know, everybody believes there was a conspiracy on September 11th. The only question is, what was the conspiracy? Was it 19 hijackers who managed to coordinate very carefully, secretly, the plan to hijack four planes and crash them into government buildings? Or was the conspiracy a conscious effort on the part of people in government not to do anything to stop the hijackers from crashing the planes into buildings and discontinuing all normal NORAD requirements for intercepting of hijacked airplanes? Which was the conspiracy? And I think that we can look at it very, very carefully. And here we have certainly the greatest military in the world that is designed to protect us from incoming missiles that can come, six, seven times the speed of sound. And they're prepared to protect us. And yet, of course, they couldn't intercept those planes, especially one that was heading towards the nation's capital, and they knew it was there. And they just couldn't get any planes in the air because nothing was armed, or they had to send the planes out over the Atlantic Ocean before they could fly back, and they couldn't fly at supersonic speeds because they might break some windows, and America's under attack. And somebody ordered the missiles at the Pentagon to stand down and not be fired that morning, and Donald Rumsfeld just sat at his desk all this time when he knew America was under attack. Didn't even bother to go to the headquarters there at the White House. There's something very wrong with the story. I agree with you.
They're all coincidences.
Right. But, I think it's much easier to believe that this was an intentional stand-down than that those 19, not very smart. These were not very, very smart terrorists. And they violated every rule of terrorists, and yet that they supposedly were smart enough to be able to carry this whole thing off.
And not only that, but their flight instructor said these guys couldn't fly a kite, much less something like a commercial airliner, that they were so inept that there was no way that they could have maneuvered, especially the one, if it went in the Pentagon, the way that it had to be banked and the speed that it supposedly came in. And, and then you look at other things like, the first interviews of, like, the mayor of Shanksville, I forget what his name is, but, I mean, this man was filmed in a German documentary only 1 month after September 11th, And in his interview, in the documentary, he says that when everybody, the first, he and his some friends and relatives, they were the first ones on the site where the Flight 93 supposedly went in. He said there was no plane. There was no bodies. There was nothing there. And, of course, the majority of the wreckage from the plane was found 8 miles away. So, you know, not only that, but the government's got all the area around where Flight 93 supposedly went in is all blocked off permanently. Nobody can get near it, not even the families, on the first commemoration of September 11, 2002. The families had a capstone-type memorial. They couldn't put it within a quarter mile of where the plane supposedly went in because it is completely blocked and sealed off by the government. Now, you have to ask yourself why. In 1993, I forget the year, 93, my husband was still an active colonel at Fort Carson, and we went and saw where a United Airlines went straight into the ground right close to Fort Carson, and I don't know if it was because my husband was in uniform and we had colonel stickers on the window, but we went over to the crash site the next day. It was a United flight, and bless the pilot's heart, they all died, but the pilots did everything, and they kept that plane from crashing into two apartment buildings, but they went nose in at the park. We were there the next day, right there, walking around. And
was there a lot of debris around?
Oh, God, Dr. Stan, it's something you will never forget. The nose of that airplane was into the ground like 15 feet.
But the rest of the plane was there.
Oh, yeah. But during the night, the night crew removed the remains. All the passengers died. Thankfully and terribly for the people, there was like only about 40 people plus the crew, but later the NTSB ruled it as wind shear was the prevailing factor for the accident. This plane took off out of Colorado Springs, but my gosh, John and I were just in shock by what we saw. There were huge chunks of the wings, the tires, it took out the trees. It was unbelievable. When you see a crash site up close like that, you'll never forget it.
But the amazing thing about the crash site there in Pennsylvania is there was nothing there. There was no tail. There was no arc. There was just this big hole in the ground. And the plane had disappeared.
Like a missile went in the ground. That's what it looks like. And that's what most of the military people who've seen the up-close photographs that were taken within a couple hours afterwards say, D.V., somebody put a missile in the ground right there. There's no plane went in there.
And I really think, ladies and gentlemen, I've talked to Jim Mars, who interviewed a woman who was in the Pentagon at the time that the explosion occurred there, and she came out through the hole in the side of the building. There were no flames there where she was. The flames were up above. There was no wreckage. There was no airplane. She went to the hospital, was immediately visited by men in black who told her, you saw a plane. And she said, no, I didn't see a plane. They said, yes, you saw a plane. You take the money and you keep your mouth shut. That's covered in Jim Marr's book, Inside Job. And I've talked to Jim. He's told me he's talked to the woman. Apparently she's a little afraid to come on the radio, but she had talked to him. He includes it in her book. But that hasn't been picked up by the New York Times either.
And one of the most telling things that raises questions about the Pentagon are the photographs themselves that don't lie. And one of the photographs that's so shocking is you see the sheared off, if you were looking straight at where this plane supposedly went in, the building is sheared just exactly like Oklahoma City was and like the Khobar Towers over in Saudi Arabia. But my goodness, sitting right there on the desks are books with the pages flapping in the wind. Now, how is it that you put, you know, an 80,000 pounds of airplane in there with 10,000 gallons of fuel, jet fuel, and it doesn't even burn the books on the desks? Come on. There's something wrong here.
Well, I think there's a lot of unanswered questions, you know, but, G.V., it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough, and you get everybody in ABC and CBS and NBC and CNN and Fox News to all agree that that's the way it is, most people will agree. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with D.V. Kidd. And, of course, we're really talking about ID cards. And the real drive today to get the American people to accept a national ID card just like they have in any totalitarian country. So we'll be back in just a moment. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about those ID cards. Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think we're going to track down Osama bin Laden and Al-Zawahiri with those cards? Or, well, we'll be back in just a moment, waiting for your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is D.V. Kidd. And, D.V., do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out this evening?
Individuals can read my columns on newswithviews.com. I also write a weekly column for WorldNet Daily, and my website is just my name, dv.com.
dv.com, and of course I read DV's articles regularly on News with Views, because I read News with Views every day when it comes out. And if you're not on their email list, well, you really need to get there, and you need to see what they have. They have some of the best articles that you'll find any place. So that, and of course World Affairs Brief are my two major sources of information, because I don't have the hours that most people have to spend surfing the net. But you can go to those two sites and you'll get a great overview, and actually many times newswithviews.com will pick up DV's articles as well. Well, is there an organized effort all across America to awaken the American people to really what's happening, that they're using the threat of terrorism to take away our freedom step by step?
Oh, there is a huge backlash going on, and of course it's very difficult to come up with numbers, because as you so eloquently put, you know, the dominant media out there, they are nothing but disinformation machines that are in hyperdrive right now. But I get emails from all over the country, actually from all over the world. But when I came out with my article, both on News with Views and WorldNet Daily, about, you know, refusing to take the national ID, you can call it civil disobedience, and call it whatever you want, 99% of the thousands of emails that I got, people said, I refuse too. I did get some that said, oh, aren't you afraid, DV? Oh, the government's going to come after you. And I'm real tired of hearing those kind of excuses. People challenge unconstitutional laws all the time. I mean, it's our duty and our obligation, when the government becomes tyrannical, to stand up and say, no, I'm going to fight you on this. You know, if they want to charge me with a crime, fine. We'll just, you know, proceed from there. But, you know, if this country's drowning in fear from its own government, and people just don't realize that they're already clanking their chains of bondage, they just can't hear it yet.
What is that old saying, that when the government fears the people, there is freedom? When the people fear the government, there is tyranny.
Well, that's exactly what's going on right now, and my advice to people is go out and rent a bucket of guts and get with the program here.
Right. Well, you certainly, I agree with you, and I admire your determination to try to make this an issue, because I think what we have to do is get the American people to realize that the administration is not involved in a war on terrorism. We're not in Iraq to fight terrorism. We never tried to capture Osama bin Laden when we went into Afghanistan. We had 11 separate opportunities to take him out ahead of time. Richard Mittner wrote a book, Losing Bin Laden. You can still probably get that. If not, get it through a used bookstore. But Losing Bin Laden, 11 separate times they had an opportunity to get Bin Laden. Bill Clinton gave them the okay to go ahead, either capture him or kill him. And the intelligence organizations refused to do it. But what is even more telling, we could justify going into Afghanistan, but you didn't have to take apart the government. All you had to do was get Osama bin Laden. We were not interested in getting Osama bin Laden. We were interested in toppling the Taliban and putting our man into power, a man who just happened to have formerly been a consultant for UNICAL. And, of course, now we control Afghanistan, and isn't that just wonderful?
Well, in my...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we're just talking with DV about the fact that they want to impose a ID card on the American people in the name of fighting terrorism. And as I pointed out, we had 11 opportunities before the attack on the Twin Towers to capture Osama bin Laden. It's covered in a book called Losing Bin Laden by Richard Mediter, and we have a number of interviews with him. We never tried to catch Osama bin Laden, even though the president on two occasions had given authorization to kill Osama bin Laden. Because he was been involved in the bombing of the coal, had been involved in the bombing, certainly of the embassies in Kenya and in Tanzania in 1998, and probably in a number of other attacks. Certainly had been involved with the attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, probably the attack in Riyadh in 1995, the Khobar Towers in 1996, the machine gunning of tourists in Luxor in 1997, and on and on and on. So Clinton had given the okay to go ahead and kill him, and the intelligence community refused to. But what was even more telling is they refused to try to get Osama bin Laden when we went into Afghanistan. If any people out there disagree with that statement, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. As for the article on Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, it's a Washington Times article. We have October 7th, 2001, where a high government official is quoted as saying, we have no intention of getting Osama bin Laden. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify the war with Afghanistan? How would we justify the war with Afghanistan? Well, let's go to Roger here, Pennsylvania. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, thank you. I noticed with this miscalled intelligence bill, of course, it forces unconstitutionally in its own right, as you pointed out, forces the state to require more data, that is, questions answered, which means for, like, the illegal aliens to lie to before getting their legal licenses.
Do you have a question for us?
Yeah, I had an over a year-long request from my state senator to see if our state database is possibly delivered en masse to the federal government rather than just, say, taking requests for, you know, supplying a criminal or potential criminal's information on a case-by-case basis, and then the states might run that through their DMV files. And I still didn't get an answer back to that. Finally, they told me, well, now you have to submit your request for information in writing, after... I'd call every couple of months to check up if anything came in on that yet. But do you have any information on that, DB, as to whether that is... Because we're close to the point now where we're going to have to refuse to get driver's license in order to not participate in a national ID card.
Well, anybody who's interested in stopping this, number one, you need to contact your representative in your state legislature, both, I don't know what you call them in your state, but here in California they call them assemblymen and state senators. You need to make an appointment with them or write a letter to them and tell them, look, I'm a citizen of this state and I'm not going to accept this. It's unconstitutional. Then you need to send your Congress critter, your House member and your counterfeit U.S. senator, and you tell them, I will not accept this. We are going to challenge, me, myself and thousands of Americans, we are going to challenge this. And it's going to end up in the court system, because one of the requirements, like I said, is issuance of birth certificates with mandatory Social Security numbers on them. Remember, Title 42, Section 405, lays out who is eligible to apply for the number. Most Americans aren't even eligible to apply for the number. It is, and always has been, a voluntary system. So the question remains, did they amend Title 42? I'm betting they didn't. Therefore, ergo, that section is going to be null and void. So this is going to be a court battle. But the more voices that they hear, the better chance we have of Congress going back and saying, uh-oh, we're in trouble. There's 35 million people out there who've already told us we're going to burn our draft card, so to speak. We're not going to accept it. As far as the driver's license issue for illegals in the states, I have the injunction sitting in a folder on my desk. Assemblyman Cedillo here has another bill for driver's licenses for illegals in this state. The only reason that this governor we have, Arnie, didn't sign the last one was because it didn't have a provision to put a red dot on the driver's license which designates the holder as an illegal alien. If this bill goes through the legislature and Schwarzenegger signs it, I'm going to file the injunction here in court to stop it, because it's in violation of federal law. They cannot give driver's licenses to people who are illegal. They have only the right to be deported.
Okay, we'll be right back in just a moment with TV Kid, and thanks so much for calling, Roger. And our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is D.V. Kidd, and we're really talking about the effort to force every state to issue a national ID card, which will, of course, serve as a driver's license and ID card when you want to get onto the airplane, and of course, whenever you're stopped, why the government can then ask you for your papers. Now, we're told, oh, we can't have racial profiling, we can't, you know, just because you're a Middle Easterner and you're wearing a turban or whatever it is, and you look like Osama bin Laden, we can't stop that because that would be racial profiling. So we're going to inspect every American citizen, consider every American citizen may be a terrorist. Now, this is just totally ridiculous. And even more, you know, they say, well, this is simply, you know, this is a temporary thing. We're at war. Well, let me tell you that everything is tied to your Social Security number. Now, when they issued the Social Security numbers back in 1935, there were many people who said, look, this is going to be used to number us just like it says in the Bible in Revelation 13. And the government assured us the Social Security number will never be used for anything other than Social Security. You can trust us. We would not lie to you. Well, of course, then the same president very shortly thereafter said in 1940, no American boy will ever fight on foreign soil. I hate war. Eleanor hates war. Even little Fala hates war. Well, of course, the president had already made a decision to go into it, already made commitments to bring America into World War II. Government people lie. Lyndon Johnson lied about Vietnam. They lied about the Gulf of Tonkin incident. They lie about everything. Why should we give any credence to the fact that they keep telling us that they have nothing to fear, this is all about fighting terrorism and really stopping illegal immigration? If they wanted to stop illegal immigration, they would have stopped it. This is all about controlling the American populace. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. They could have stopped the invasion across the borders a long time ago, but they don't want to do that because the goal of this government is world government. It is sucking the United States into a world body where we completely and totally surrender our sovereignty and our borders to this one world government. And, there was a call coming in, of course, when you're on radio. But it is the goal of the government. And my new article I just sent over to WorldNet Daily on the United Nations, and it is just another communist organization, and that is the sole purpose of it, and the open borders is just part of the grand master plan, and it is destroying this country, and there's a tremendous amount of violence going on.
Hold that thought right there, D.V. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is D.V. Kidd. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, D.V. was saying that the purpose of our government is to bring about a world government. And that's absolutely right. If you remember during the recent elections, both John Kerry and George Bush were both members of the same secret society, Skull and Bones. And, of course, the people from that organization have always been dedicated to world government. Did you notice that neither one of the candidates talked about the global program of globalization and the transferring of our jobs and our industries and our wealth overseas?
They didn't talk about anything but John Kerry's war record. And John Kerry wanted to talk about furthering the communist agenda with all these entitlement programs and free health care for everyone and free this and free... They're just, you know, as people so often say, they're the same agenda. They just make it look like, you know, that there's some difference between the parties, but there isn't.
You're absolutely right.
No constitutionalist can get to ascend to the presidency of the United States of America any longer unless they are vetted and are part of the elitist establishment. And now we can't even get these rotten crooks out of Congress because the electronic machines control the vote.
And until we get rid of those voting machines, and I would simply, you know, I think we've really got to start to say we're not going to use those voting machines. Oh, you know, I would far rather, you know, to use an absentee vote than use those voting machines, although they can certainly contrive the absentee ballots as well. But we've got to get rid of those voting machines or we will never have another honest election in America. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Chicago. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there? Is this Jim? Oh, Rodney. Rodney, you hang on there, and we'll go to Jim, and we'll be right back to... is this Jim?
Yes, good evening.
Okay, Hi. Jim, and we'll get to Rodney next.
Okay, Dee, I agree with you 100%. My only concern, most Americans are either involved in sports, their own financial situation, you know, they're dumbed down, that they're not even aware of what's going on, thanks to the media. And I just think that Americans won't wake up until it's too late.
Well, what we have to do, Jim, is try. You know, if we sit around and say, gee, nothing can be done, we've already lost. So you might as well just give up and you know, go off and, you know, just have a good time. But if you're really concerned, you're going to get people reading DV's articles on the Internet, because we've got the Internet we've never had before.
Right.
We've got alternative radio. These programs, 5 hours a day, go all over the world. Your job is to spend full time getting people to read DV and listen to me.
Right.
DV, how would you respond to Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment. Back in 1776, the very brave and you know, so intelligent and wise men who birthed this republic, they were, you know, we're not much different than they were back then, because the majority of the colonials at that time, their financial well-being was dependent upon the crown and King George. And today, the American people have been sucked into government dependency and all of these unconstitutional cabinets and bringing home the bacon and all that. Back in 1775, 1776, they didn't have the same ability to communicate as we did. They only had people like, you know, Paul Revere. We have the Internet, we have talk radio, we have fax machines, we have telephones, we have, you know, people who meet in churches and groups and organizations. And then there was a certain percentage of the colonials and the people out in this rural America who couldn't be reached. They were busy fighting the Indians and, you know, planting corn, and they really didn't have any idea or concept of what freedom was. But a very small core of individuals who stayed focused were determined to birth this republic, and they did. And that's what we have to do. We have to reach every person that we can. Those who don't want the truth, fine, step out of the way. You know, there's about 170 million adult-age Americans in this country, not counting illegals. The majority of them won't pay any attention until it's too late. But we can't let that deter us. We have to stand firm, and we have to stay focused on the most critical of issues, the vote fraud, this national ID, the invasion by the illegals. Then that is going to start touching the population in a way they won't be able to ignore. Frosty Woolbridge's articles on News with Views, I copy them and give them to my mother. I give her 50 sets of each one of his, and she takes them down to the senior center, particularly the one he wrote a few weeks ago on the epidemic of tuberculosis in this country now, because it's coming. The illegals are bringing all these diseases in, and they, because they're illegals, they are primarily getting jobs in the restaurant and hotel industry, and there they're passing on hepatitis like crazy. 40%, I don't know where they get this number, but even if only, you know, it's only 1% of the illegal male aliens coming across the border are HIV or have full-blown AIDS, and they're spreading that all over the place. So we're seeing a re-emergence to an epidemic level of things like TB in this country. And so, you know, the general population is going to start paying attention here shortly.
And DB's absolutely right. Actually, there's been outbreaks of pertussis. And where is the outbreaks of the whooping cough? Why, it's in the areas where the adjacent to the border, where the Mexicans are coming across into this country, and they're carrying the disease with them. But let me just point out to you, Jim, that in 1906, Lenin met, and he had 14 people with him. And they were dedicated to bringing communism to Russia. In 1917, and the October Revolution, they had about 4,000 members of the Communist Party, and they took over a nation of 100 million people. They were dedicated. Are you dedicated?
Sure am.
Okay, fine. Well, then, don't sit around and say that we're not going to be able to do anything. There's a lot you can do. Listen, get other people listening, get them educated, make copies of DB's articles and Frosty Woodridge's articles, and get them out. Thanks so very much for calling. Don't get discouraged. I've been at this 42 years, and I'm a lot more encouraged than I've ever been before, okay? Bye-bye. Let's go to Rodney calling from Texas. Hi, Rodney.
Yes, sir. Dr. Stan, I appreciate your program.
Just speak up a little louder.
I want to commend you for having such a great program and also having great guests on.
Well, I'll tell you, we got a great guest tonight.
Yes.
Love the Lone Star State.
thank you. I wanted to add, even before 1776, we had something that was very revolutionary that took place during biblical times when Jesus only had 12 apostles that he started with, and he only had word of mouth, and we can see the impact that he made back then. And regarding books that are bestsellers, last time I checked, the Bible is the bestseller, but you don't even see that on the New York Times either.
Right, you're absolutely right. Point well made, Rob.
I also want to say that in the San Diego Union Tribune, today's edition, you know, speaking of people who think that they're above the law, this guy that they're nominating for Roberto Gonzalez.
Yeah, Alberto Gonzalez.
Yeah, Alberto Gonzalez. There seems to be a lot of problems with him giving up paperwork regarding his interrogation of some suspects. And we know that he, at one point there, made statements saying that the president was basically above the law and the Constitution. And I want to get your guest's response on that. And I want to also tell you, you know, please keep up the good work, ma'am. You know, I think that... like Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. We can't save everybody out here. Noah wasn't able to do it. Jesus wasn't able to do it. But if you can get a few people out there who are focused, just like DB said, we can make a dent. And I believe, I can feel this, Dr. Stan, that we are making a dent because these people are doing anything and everything to try to shut down the avenues, you know, that we're using to communicate and get the truth around. But one thing that they can't shut down, even if they shut down TV, radio, and shortwave, they can't shut down word of mouth.
Amen to that.
I'm going to go ahead and let your guests respond to my question about Alberto Gonzalez.
What's your thoughts on Alberto Gonzalez, TV?
Well, as a matter of fact, tonight, News with Views will have a news item on Alberto Gonzalez, because News with Views has filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get his military records, because there's something very wrong with how he went to the Yukon up in Alaska for 2 years and then suddenly won a cadetship at the United States Air Force Academy, but, quote, left after 2 years because he was tired of studying science and went to Rice University. Well, that's a four-year commitment, folks, and... my husband's a retired Army colonel, and I guarantee you, you don't just decide you're tired of the military and want to transfer to some college. So anyway, that's going to be the breaking news tonight. It is true, Alberto Gonzalez, when he was a judge, he managed to keep Mr. Bush off of jury duty to cover up Bush's drunk driving conviction in Maine in 1986, I think it was.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah, he was convicted for drunk driving. Gonzalez made sure that Bush didn't serve on the jury so he didn't have to go through voir dire and answer any questions. And, of course, the American people didn't find out until about 2 weeks before the 2000 election, when it was too late and the newspapers didn't say anything about it. This guy, Mr. Bush, owes Mr. Gonzalez. And this guy has no regard for the Constitution. He was part and parcel to the misnamed USA Patriot Act, besides these memos on calling provisions of the Geneva Convention quaint little, you know, provisions.
This guy's
unbelievable.
Can I also ask just something that I'd heard? Is Mr. Gonzalez, Alberto Gonzalez, a staunch member of LIRASA?
He was on the board for one of their associate organizations. I wrote a news item on that also.
I think that's very disturbing there.
There's no question that this guy, very few people have ever been on the fast track like Alberto Gonzalez. If you read this guy's bio, somebody was behind him and greased the way. My question is, his mother and father were migrant farm workers. Of all the research I did before I filed the FOIA for News with Views, I couldn't find any place where it says his parents legally became citizens.
I really can't, and I hate to make this a comparison, but it seems like there really isn't any difference between Alberto Gonzalez and this guy that tried to make the head of Homeland Security, but when his dirt came out that he was basically a crook and nothing but a trained killer. I'm talking about Carrick.
Oh, yeah. Rudy's good friend.
They both sound like they are cut from the same mold, and I hate to be so, blunt about it, but it just sounds like they both, when you start looking in the closets and whatnot, that you'll probably find out that Mr. Gonzalez is probably just as ruthless and dirty as...
Of course he is. Why do you think he served as Bush's chief counsel? If you don't play the game, if you're not one of the people that goes along with the agenda, you don't get there. I mean, there's no more citizen government.
Yeah.
It's been taken over by the New World Order cabal.
It's sad that we have gotten these sort of people, who are supposed to be an authority leading this country, and yet, a lot of people, as you pointed out, are so into TV and football and beer and all of this sort of thing that they're not paying attention to this sort of thing. And
Rodney, your job is getting listening to the program. We're going to have to go because we've got a full board, but God bless you, and thanks so much for calling. Let's go. Is this Dale? Hello, is this Dale in Soquel, or who's this we got now?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Dale, do you have a question or comment?
I do have a question, quick comment, it's obvious these people, they don't recognize boundaries for our country because they themselves don't live by at least boundaries that we recognize in their personal lives. So one thing I do have a question for DV is, especially personally observing in another country, the economic machinations and manipulations performed by a communistic government. What do you see as approaching or in the development plans, what have you, for that we get to enjoy at the hand of this, essentially godless cabal? And I'll take your answer on the air. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Who do I see down the road?
Right.
I see the American people in complete and total bondage. I see that our elections are completely and totally corrupt. And if the people do not stand up, we are going to end up with biochips in our wrists. And I know, Dr. Stan, that you know a tremendous amount about this as I do, the school-to-work program became law in 1994. Pretty soon they're going to start, this will be percolating to the surface. Wait till the American people get a load of the government telling their son or their daughter that they cannot be a veterinarian, that in the demographic world they've decided that they need more hotel maids in Chicago, and so your son or your daughter will go into that career field and will be barred from becoming a veterinarian. The American people, wait till they get a load of the school-to-work program, because it's already the law. They just haven't pushed it yet.
And I think it's so vitally important that people understand there is an elite They want to control our lives. They really believe, as Plato did, that you should have a two-class society, well, a three-class society, a ruling elite, a massive military and police force, and then everybody else will be under their control. They do not want a middle class. They do not believe that the average individual is capable of being of ruling himself. They think only the elite can control. They believe that the aristocracy, and they believe in aristocracy, should be able to determine what we do from the cradle to the grave. That's exactly what they believe in communist countries as well, which is why, if you go back and study the history of communism from its inception, it has always had directly or indirectly aid from the West. They never want to tell you that, but if you read the history very, very carefully, and if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll find out from the inception of communism why American agents were there, from our banking industry, from our corporations, from the Rockefellers, and from the Federal Reserve Board, and from April Harriman, Skull and Bones, incidentally. They were always the major economic force in Russia, and they were what kept Russia from collapsing. Communism doesn't work. It is a very inefficient system. The only reason it survived as long as it did was because of constant infusions of aid and technology from the United States. Well, let's go to Roger. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, and by the way, last week or two, the McLaughlin group, it was either Tony Blankley and either McLaughlin or Buchanan opined that the groundswell would soon demand really addressing the illegal alien issue. And I wanted to bring you back to this ID card, DB, and that is, do you have any information as to whether the federal government is or will soon be acquiring the DMV databases?
I don't, and that's something that I'm going to try to find out when I go over to McClintock's office.
We do know that they were actually used a front organization to buy the pictures from many states. In other words, they take a picture, they put on your driver's license. They said, well, this was a private corporation. It really wasn't. It was a front for the government. Why did they have to lie? Well, that's what the function of government is. We'll be back in just a moment. Thanks so much, Roger. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is D.B. Kidd. And let me just point out that it was last year, 2003, that General William Odom, who formerly headed the National Security Agency, that most top secret of all secret agencies, NSA, sometimes known as No Such Agency, wrote a book was called Fixing Intelligence. And most of the book is simply boredom. But there are several interesting points he made. One of them is he can't really tell you what's going on in intelligence. He can only ask questions like, should the CIA be carrying out assassinations? Should the CIA have agents planted in the media as journalists? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? Libby, we've got about 2 minutes. Why don't you wrap up the program?
Well, I just would like to encourage everybody once again to get a hold of your state senator and your assemblyman and tell them that it is their duty and their obligation to uphold the rights of the citizens of the sovereign republic of the state of California, and that this national ID driver's license to be issued by Homeland Security is unconstitutional. You're not going to accept it, and you expect them to stand up. Send a letter, polite, no threats, please, to your state or your federal senator, the two clown ladies that serve, and your House member, and tell them, I will not accept this. I will fight it. There's, you know, like I said, we're going to court because it clearly is unconstitutional.
Little bit by little bit, they take away our freedom.
Well, this is a major battle, because if we don't stop this, like I said at the beginning of the show, the next one is going to be mandatory biochips, and I don't know any Christian who's going to, well, I guess there will be those who get down on their knees and accept it, but I'm not.
Well, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of the churches, a lot of our church leaders that say it's perfectly all right to do that. After all, we are to be, we're to do what the government says. Romans 13 says we're to obey the government no matter how corrupt it is, because God put them in power. And that's exactly the same message that they were preaching in Hitler's Germany. Romans 13, if you want to get the background, there's a book, Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer. We carry it. That's Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer. You must reading to understand what happened in Hitler's Germany, because what's happening in America today is like deja vu all over again. And in Hitler's Germany, the ministers went right along with Adolf Hitler. In fact, a lot of them were taking money from the Nazi government, sort of like the faith-based initiative that they're pushing in America, where they gave $1 billion last year. Dee, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and that's Dee Kidd, and we hope to have Dee back on again real soon, and I think she's absolutely right. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're really able to do what we do, 5 hours every day. Now, your job out there in the listening audience is to tell other people about our radio programs and tell them about newswithviews.com. If you don't have a computer, invest $500 and get one and get on the Internet, and you'll have access to a tremendous amount of information. Among other things, you can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, not accomplish much of anything, on the Genesis Communication Network at GCNLive.com, AmericanNewsNet.com, Republic Network, well, and the Republic Network, and of course the Soundwave Network and the Radio Liberty Network. But I would go to RadioLiberty.com, and you can get our programs there and find out about the other networks we're on as well. We're on about 60 stations every week, sometimes just half an hour, but at least we have a voice because there are people out there care enough to help us. So we do hope that many of you out there will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, if you want to understand how this all fits together, that there is a master plan behind what's going on, why, of course, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or get the video and the audio tape as well in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. To understand the men who pull the strings behind the scenes, why, of course, you need to get our sustainable development syllabus and our sustainable development video or 4-tape set, or get all of them together. And, of course, if you would like to get a copy of, say, the material from the State of the World Forum. Who attends Gorbachev's State of the World Forum? Why, George Herbert Walker Bush, Ted Turner and Mabiki and George Shultz and James Baker is on the board of directors. At least he was. George Shultz was on the board of directors. He was replaced by James Baker III. Why are these people putting themselves in a subservient position to Mikhail Gorbachev? Because he's part of a secret organization, at least according to James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress. In a book that he wrote, which we have pages from, James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, tells how he was leaving Russia, and one of the major communists there said things were going fairly well until Gorbachev went to London and was inducted into a secret Masonic lodge by none other than Margaret Thatcher. Well, now Margaret Thatcher is a great conservative, a great Christian spokesman. What's she doing with Gorbachev and inducting him into a secret Masonic lodge? Are there really secret societies out there? You need to read Brotherhood of Darkness and find out. If incidentally, if you'd like those pages from Billington's book, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'd be glad to send it to you. If you'd like the list of the people who attended Gorbachev's State of the World Forum meeting, including George Herbert Walker Bush, why, we'll be glad to send that to you. Just give us a call, ask for the material. If you want to know why we didn't get Osama bin Laden when we went into Afghanistan, ask for the Washington Times article on Osama bin Laden, why we didn't get him. And then, of course, you need to get the videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, great understanding of the spiritual battle we're engaged in today, put out by Chris Pinto, 2 separate videos, 1 2.25 hours, 3 hours, Megiddo 2, fascinating video. In fact, I'm in that one, and you'll actually hear me talking about the Georgia Guidestones and Madame Blavatsky. And then, if you have not yet seen They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour version, the 4-hour version or the 10-hour version. My wife was watching it this weekend. She was so gripping, I had a hard time getting her way to come join us. It's a fascinating, fascinating video. So that's the Soul to Souls for Rock and Roll. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until next week, may the Lord be with you. Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, this evening we have with us a very special guest, one of my favorite guests. His name is Tal Brook. And Tal has a ministry called Spiritual Counterfeits. He's a fascinating young man. He's not a young man. He's probably getting on a little bit in years, but he's a little younger than I am. And of course, he started out in universities and getting on to LSD and getting into the drug culture and going to India and becoming a disciple of Sai Baba. And actually being groomed to come to America to spread this religion, this Hindu religion here in America, this occultic religion. And then, of course, beginning to understand that this was not the path to God, and then becoming a born-again Christian, evangelical Christian, and coming back to America and writing a wonderful book. It was called, I believe, When the World Will Be as One, and it was sold very, very well. And then, of course, he's rewritten the book, and we carry, what's the new title, Tal?
It's called One World, and it's got about 200 plus pictures and diagrams and new material that I think, well, sort of tells the big overview. It's the original cover was a globe being put together with puzzle bits, and after each chapter there's a puzzle bit, so that gives you a hint.
Well, I think that Tal has done a great job of getting out the message, which I think is what every American needs to understand, and that is behind everything that's happening, there is a master plan, and behind the master plan are dark spiritual forces. And you'll find them in Hollywood. He's got some great sections in there on what's coming out of Hollywood, and he's got great sections on every aspect of what's going on today. As step by step by step, we move from freedom to dependency and ultimately towards slavery, and I think even far worse, because I believe there is a plan for worldwide genocide. I think if you read Revelations 13, Revelation 6, 8, you'll find the story of the fourth horse of the apocalypse, and from there on it's all downhill. And we see these things coming to pass today. Terrible things are happening in the world. I mean, there's terrible slaughter. For instance, when was the last time anybody heard anybody talk about the slaughter that's going on in the Congo? They've killed 3.5 million people there. We're not talking about that. We're just not doing anything about it. We're just letting it take its course. People are dying of AIDS. We're not trying to stop the epidemic. We're doing everything we can to foster it. We're finding all sorts of new diseases, and many of these are being actually created in government laboratories. We're coming up with all sorts of new types of drugs, which are deadly as far as the individual are concerned, genetically modified food, which, of course, in animals produces terrible reactions and illness and eventual death. And it's being used by the American people. The rulers have an agenda, but they don't dare let us understand it. So, Tal, tell us what you think about what's going on.
Well, I think that just like in my book, One World, I mean, you just gave a very good outline. There are so many sides to this thing that it's incredible. And, you know, we're saying, look, I hear the music in the background, so I'm going to slow down. But just as we end this segment, what's happening to the dollar? It's plummeting. What's happening to our national debt? Higher than ever before. What's happening to our constitutional liberties? Well, the Patriot Act and other things that are just, very few people that seem to see it in protest. There are some police state precedents going on that older Americans in earlier ages would not have allowed. I mean, and even the TV programs of sort of unlimited police power is getting people ready to submit to anything. And then in your November-December letter, we're seeing how chemicals have been used. But I know we need to take a break because I can hear the music.
Well, actually, we've already got to the break. I guess okay. Tal Brook. And we're talking about, of course, what's going on in our society. And Tal is expressing his concern that we are moving away from freedom towards really a corporate fascist state. And the average person is relatively unaware of that because things are so good. The economy, if you've got a job, you're in good shape. If you don't have a job, you may be getting a little desperate right now. But Of course, Tal was just mentioning my latest newsletter. Did you have a chance to read that?
Oh, I always do, and it's absolutely jam-packed. The one I got in the mail the other day was actually the November issue, but your quotes from Bertrand Russell. And, you know, I remember being in college and people kind of mocking out, ha-ha, you know, what's the problem with fluorine in the water? I mean, there are all these paranoid right-wingers worried about, you know, putting chemicals in the drinking water. What are they worried about? And then you get these staggering, and you as an MD, as a top doctor, know this stuff. Not only comments by people who've done studies on fluorine, and fluoridation of water, obviously, is what I'm talking about, the different fluorides. It's even in toothpaste, by the way, so if you get it out of your water, you're still going to get it in the toothpaste tube. What this stuff does, just the whole thing about one area of the brain where it can make you more and more passive, here's what came to mind, and I think it'll resonate with the people listening to us. Obviously, when most of us grew up, if we went to fairly good schools, we read things like Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Now, what is really happening is a synthesis of those two books, because Orwell had the all-powerful police state that no individual has the power to rise up against. You'll get, you know, squashed like a bug. Huxley, from a slightly different background, but I mean, both these guys knew some of the same people, players in England. Huxley's point, and it's something that Bertrand Russell brought up about a scientific dictatorship, is listen, there are a lot of tools out there to domesticate the sheeple, okay? Starting out with just public education. Remember John Dewey's My Pedagogic Creed outlined how you behavior modify people by teaching them things in school. I mean, things are now being taught that were inconceivable 30 years ago. Another thing you do, and Huxley was really good at this, is the whole field of designer drugs. You know, you may remember recently that Bush...
Hold that thought for just a minute, because we got to bring our other stations back from
sure.
all across America.
Absolutely.
So they'll be joining us right about now.
Sure.
Well, our guest, of course, is Talbrook, and of course his book, One World, and we also carry another book that he's written. What's the other
it's
one?
It's called Avatar of Night, about my years in India.
Avatar of Night. So One World and Avatar of Night, both wonderful reads. But Atal was simply pointing out that there are two books that paint this a picture of the coming dictatorship. One was George Orwell's 1984. The other was Aldous Huxley. And of course, they were both very tied to England and these forces behind Bertrand Russell, who I quote in my November newsletter. So pick up the story.
Yeah, well,
right
here's
now.
The deal. I mean, where history's going right now is really a combination of those two classic books. Orwell's 1984, remember, was a techno-tyranny with Big Brother, and it was all, it was like the old Soviet order and really other parts of the world where the individual just can't stand up against this power. You'll be crushed like a bug. Now, Huxley's Brave New World had a gentler approach, but it was really the same end. And in his conception of a scientific dictatorship, he had a broader palette. So what I mentioned a second ago is what Huxley knew of course. American Fabian socialist John Dewey wrote My Pedagogic Creed, where he outlines the real purpose of a big government program of education. And that is you get inside the mind of the child, and really it's called behavior modification. You overrule their beliefs. But Huxley was pointing to something else, too. Remember, Huxley turned me on years ago with his book, The Doors of Perception, Heaven and Hell, when he talked about his experiences under mescaline and psilocybin and other psychedelics. What a lot of these very smart people have been doing for a long time, folks, is pioneering psychotropic and mind compounds and behavior-modifying drugs. Now, what I pointed out a second ago is I go nuts when I see these things, and most people, I don't think, see it. Just the general suggestion by George Bush that every child be psychologically tested, you know, for mental illness. Wow, what power that gives the state. They can arbitrarily grab any kid who may be too really interdirected, to use one term, to make him more socialized. Well, you hear, this also gives them the power to drug the kids. I mean, we're at a level now. I mean, if the parents could really see it, where such a percentage of kids are being given a wide range of behavior modifying drugs that actually have long term effect. It's changing them. Now, you pointed out in your newsletter just about studies of what fluoride can do in making people passive. You know, Clyde Swinburne, I remember in college people mocking this guy out as some kind of a nut. I never really knew who he was, and there were a lot of jokes among the so-called scholarly intelligentsia about, you know, right-wing lunatic, conspiracy-minded nuts being worried about fluoride being put into the water. And then this guy says, well, let me tell you the studies what fluoride really does, fluoridation. It's horrifying. And that's an earlier, milder example of the drugging of our culture. And there's so many sides to this thing. I mean, I think we're, you know, we could go on all night just about the Patriot Act. I know John Whitehead, who's a friend of mine at the Rutherford Institute, who's seen between the lines of this stuff. A lot of true conservatives, not neocons, but I'm talking about real conservatives. I'm one of them. Don't just take this blanket patriotism. Well, they're waving their flags. They love America. That doesn't count. Remember George Washington, the founder, said, look, if we try to destroy the Constitution, if we try to pull the wool over your eyes, in so many words, you know, kick us out. You remember that. I mean, it's the warnings are profound in what's happening now since 9/11 and since so many things have gone crazy. I don't think there's been a shredding of American liberties at a rate as we've seen under this so-called conservative government. I mean, I couldn't stand Clinton, believe me. His Oval Office crap just drove me crazy. His amorality drove me nuts. His liberalism drove me nuts. I'm as worried under this regime. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I'm actually more worried about
I'm
this
more
regime
worried
because
too.
We.
I'm trying
we,
to be fair here, but I mean, I'm very worried.
I think that we knew that Bill Clinton was our enemy. He was the enemy of freedom. He was an immoral man.
Yep.
The problem with this administration is it's looked upon by the average conservative Christian America as a Christian administration, and so we make excuses for everything they do. Well, of course, torture. Yes, that's terrible. We shouldn't be torturing people and humiliating them and sexually molesting them. But after all, look at how terrible the other side is. Why they're beheading people?
Yeah.
Well, why should we be surprised they're beheading people? They've been beheading people in Saudi Arabia for years. This is a they have a square. They call it Chop Chop Square.
Yeah.
We've backed Saudi Arabia all along. This ruthless feudal kingdom that beheads people routinely, and yet we sort of justify what we're doing because why the terrorists have beheaded people.
The PR machine, though, in the Pentagon, you know, especially Fife and Wolfowitz and these other characters that most people don't know about, who formulated the Pax Americana and who formulated a preemptive military thing that violates everything we've ever done, is terrifying beyond belief. And these guys know they can go smiling out to Switzerland where they've got money in the banks if America blows to shreds. They don't give a rip. They really don't. And so some of Bush's advisors seem to so overshadow his mental abilities, it's terrifying.
Well, I certainly share your concern about what's going on. Well, we've got Tony calling from Soquel. Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Oh, fine, Dr. Stan.
Have a question for our guest?
That's sort of a comment. I really agree with what he's just saying. By the way, I read that book about, oh, I don't know, must have been 8 or 9 years ago.
That was When the World Will Be as One, the earlier edition.
Yeah, in fact, you were on Dr. Stan's about, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 years ago.
On Doctor Who?
Dr. Stan.
That's me.
Oh, yeah, sure. We're old friends.
Go ahead.
But about that same time, John Loeffler, who a lot of people are familiar with, was talking about when the United States finally gets to the point where it's like out in the open totalitarianism, that it would be under the right and not the left.
Yeah.
And the other day, I think it was last night, actually, the two Bush presidents and Clinton were up on stage with their hands out, and you know, and I told my kids, you know, as much as I despised Clinton, he actually looks better to me than Bush.
I never thought I would say that myself. I mean, I agree with you. I think the country, and if I were a Hollywood director orchestrating all these presidents, I could do a better job than how it worked from Bush Sr., who I couldn't stand, to Clinton, who I literally loathed. I mean, I went nuts when he and Al Gore went into office. And the Monica Lewinsky thing, I'd say to people, say, I told you so, the guy's a sociopath. You know, don't trust him with power. And then, uh-oh, the latest prototype comes in. It walks like a duck. I mean, we think it's conservative. But what's happening, and you know this, is fascism and nothing else, and it's very scary stuff.
And I think one of the most telling things is there is a Bush Family Foundation that offers awards to people on a regular basis, you know, for outstanding performance.
Sure.
And, of course, the one last year went to that great conservative senator, Teddy Kennedy.
Oh, God.
Why would the Bush Family Foundation give an award to Teddy Kennedy?
Ted Kennedy, because it's we're, you know, every show you and I do, we end up going, at least what I've mentioned in One World, to get people to understand what's happening behind the scenes, is to get them to look at Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. And if you want to see who the real rulers are, they're wearing the masks. They're at super mega billionaire estates that you cannot imagine, and they live in a world that you will not understand.
And in fact, a lot of them are listed in members of the State of the World Forum, and we have those lists from Gorbachev himself.
Yeah.
The Gorbachev State of the World Forum, and you see all these leaders of the country and the great corporate heads and George Bush and Ted Turner and Mabiki, and you go down the list of the people that attend those meetings.
Yep.
These are the people who rule the world.
They rule the world, and when you see them triangulate between the Trilateral Society and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and their other groups, then you're getting really hot. And the truth is the Bush family has been going back to Prescott Bush, the granddad, and he and of course Bush Senior and this Bush were all members of Skull and Bones at Yale. And it's got an absolute one-world post-American agenda. And they can put their hand on their heart and play, recite Pledge of Allegiance, but believe me.
So what are they allegiance
believe
to?
Me. Right. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, Tony, do you have any other questions?
This might be a little off the wall, but I seem to remember a while back that I had read something, and I can't remember where, but that there was a link between the Prescott Bush and his ancestors and Colonel Mandel House.
There could be. There could well be. Of course, House was the Rothschild agent during the time of Woodrow Wilson, and he, of course, was at Wilson's. I have a picture of the two of them wearing identical outfits in my book, which is a dead giveaway. Because,
oh, really?
House shadowed Wilson everywhere he went. And, of course, he was there when Woodrow Wilson signed two killing things, creating our Federal Reserve System and then creating our graduated income tax.
And the 17th Amendment as well, which was another nail in
correct.
The coffin.
Correct, absolutely correct.
Okay, we're going to be back here in just a moment. Do you want to hang on, Tony? Or?
Okay.
Okay, fine. Hang on, we'll be back here in just a moment. And, of course, we will welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Tal Brook. His book, One World and Avatar of Night. A fascinating reading. You want to get both of them. And, of course, you'll get tremendous insight in there, probably from one of the most astute observers of this move towards the destruction of what was once America.
Amen.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We have Tal Brook on the line. We have Tony. Tony, do you have another question you wanted to ask before we let you go?
Well, maybe this is a little off the wall, too, but if you don't mind, if you bear with me.
All right, one more off the wall. That's it.
If I get two out there, just cut me off.
Okay, go ahead.
This question would probably be a better one for Nick Begich. I was just wondering if there were any strange or unusual things going on up in Alaska in the ionosphere, Christmas Day or the day after Christmas.
What you're really wondering is whether or not the HAARP project up there could have had anything to do with, of course, what we've seen in the way of the earthquake and the tsunami.
Well, I'm quite aware of Tesla's experiment that sort of went awry and. It sort of hit Siberia back, I think it was like in the 1918s or somewhere around then, and they still don't know what it was. They say it was some sort of an atomic explosion. And I had just a frightful, horrible dream the other night, and this whole thing was man-made. And I don't even like to say that, but I was just wondering if anybody would know if there was any unusual things going on in the ionosphere.
About the
I want to listen to this one.
About the ionosphere, I'm not sure. I had an instant intuition after the huge quake tsunami thing. I was in Sri Lanka for several months exactly that time 2 years ago, and it would have nailed me. I almost bought a house over there. And it's true, and you know that, Stanley.
I
was talking to you about maybe getting a house in Sri Lanka, and this thing blew, and I'll be honest with everyone, I was in Hawaii for Christmas when this thing blew. And my gut feeling was, you know, this thing could have well been manipulated. I mean, in today's technology, what's really odd is that I went to Barnes & Noble the other night, and I don't remember the author, but it was all the sort of thriller bestsellers. And I looked on the back, and by heavens, this bestseller, the guy is bound to be in the media soon. He's I've never read this author, but he's fairly well known. And the whole premise of the book is a manipulated natural disaster earthquake scenario. I thought, wow, you know. What intelligence has he been looking at? And here's something to consider with what our guest said. One of the ongoing areas in terms of the New World Order consolidation of power that's been a problem in terms of the Islamic thing is right there in the Indonesian islands. The one where it really hit is where they, as far as I understand, is where they've had some extreme military stuff, basically grabbing and kidnapping missionaries and Westerners and holding them hostage and sending out sending these people out to fight. It's a very militant group, and I thought, what an interesting New World Order way to just blast the islands, create a tectonic plate event. Then you've got the earthquake, and then you've got the tsunami. You know, and this tsunami, unfortunately, is a junior player compared to how big they can get. Hundreds of feet high. This thing was 30. So, such natural things, quote.
Hold that thought for just a moment there. And here we go. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Tal Brook. And a guest had called and said, is there any possibility that what we saw happening here, the earthquake that set off the tsunami, was man-made? Tal was saying he'd actually had been down, picked up a book, an adventure story, and it was that very day that it occurred, or very closely thereafter, and it dealt with a man-made earthquakes and natural disasters. And there is technology out there. Now, I'm not saying this is what happened, but pick up the story from there, Tal.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was at Barnes & Noble, and the thesis of the book was a militarily a stealth attack on the tectonic plates that created a huge earthquake. And that's his paperback I found at Barnes & Noble. I didn't note the author, but I've seen him before. You know, he's sold before, and I just thought, wow, he's going to be on the TV, or they're going to silence him and shut him up, and he'll have an accident in a West Virginia motel. I mean,
this is like Ian Fleming died at a very, very, very young age.
Oh, sure.
He was really talking, he always talked about Spectre, you know, the James Bond series, and there was Spectre, and that was really, of course, the force we're talking about.
Yeah,
it wasn't communism, it wasn't capitalism.
Another guy did die in a West Virginia motel.
Right.
I mean, he was the guy looking into some really heavy groups that were operating. It's very sobering. But what we know on the outside is that there seems to be this momentum of history, and I mentioned it in my book, One World. It seems unstoppable, and whether you're talking about, I mean, you know, one of my theses, and we've talked about it, is a very powerful glue for globalism is just national debt. Let's just knock that out. And the president right now, I mean, the present guy in office is creating record levels of national debt. We're just burning up the dollar with blowtorches, and then, of course, the Fed prints more monopoly money, and the dollar plummets in value. And people say, well, that's good for us because they're all buying our stuff. And you think, all right, let's extend the logic there if you're really that simple-minded. Show your diamond wedding ring. Okay, would you like to sell it for $5? I mean, you'll sell it, right? You get $5 for it. I mean, if the dollar in value, if $5,000 defaults to a $5 value level, you just sell your diamond ring for $5. If Harvey the postman in the good old days sweated his guts out and saved $30,000, and we get into the sort of inflation that Germany did in World War II, and you saw what happened with the mark, then that $30,000, you say, Harvey, you done well. Because now you can buy a whole bag of groceries for that $30,000. Do you think he's lost anything?
Well, you know, it's most interesting. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal the other day by Laffer. And he was saying, look, this is a great thing. The dollar is falling because now people are going to be coming investing in America. They can buy up things so much more cheaply. And he said the one point he made was the dollar will not fall to nothing. And though it has to stop at some level, and at that time, then you begin to consolidate, and you begin to going on from there. And that is a half-truth.
It's a half-truth because you're being robbed every time it falls, because real wealth is stolen by the government that prints the money. You're losing your equity. You're losing your value.
There was an article, it was a very small article in the paper, was talking about Turkey. And they were going to take 3 zeros off of, or maybe it was 5 zeros off of everything, because right now...
You start right at level one and then add the zeros over the next 10 years.
Right. Well, they basically were going to, of course, to take away all these zeros. You could get a dinner now for about 10 million lira. So they were going to take off the, the 6 zeros, I guess.
Sure.
And, of course, then, of course, they were going to issue 11 lira. And that's what's happened. That one time, the lira was real value. And through successive administrations that are doing just what our administration has done,
sure,
they totally destroyed the value. The currency did not go to nothing. It just went to almost nothing.
That's right. And people lose all the... And, of course, the conservatives that talk about what happens when you get off of something like the gold standard, when the government is able to just run the printing presses, it's really who can out-con who in terms of the nations. Now, as we go on, this creates debt, folks, and then debt requires some great figure in history to come in and solve the debt problem, and I think after the music we'll probably talk about that.
We will, and of course this is what happened in France after the revolution in 1789. They came up with a wonderful program. They were going to print all the money they needed and create prosperity. And it really worked very well. The stock market boomed, prices of property went up, the factories were working full time. Until, of course, the whole thing fell apart, and they ended up with a new leader. His name was Napoleon Bonaparte.
Very good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Tal Brook. We were talking about what happened in other countries that have done exactly what we're doing. Incidentally, if you'd like to read the story of what happened in France in 1789, we have the book. It's called Fiat Money Inflation in France. It's very inexpensive. But it's like reading that book, which was written over 100 years ago, by Andrew Dickinson White, who I think was the president of Cornell University. But it's like deja vu all over again. You can see happening exactly the same thing today. That's why they're not raising taxes. That's not why they're not worried about debt. They don't intend to pay it off. They're simply going to make it disappear by inflation, and with that, the destruction of the pensions, of the annuities, of the bonds, of the CDs, of the bank deposits of every American. So pick up the story there, Tal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic tale. Certainly, one of the proponents of this from Cambridge University went on tour. The British economist, I'll tell you his name in a second.
And Keynes?
Yeah, John Maynard Keynes. I'm trying to remember the point where he visited some people at Harvard. We both know who they are. And then he went to Columbia and joined the Fabian group there. Okay, he was really pushed by the Fabian socialist insiders in America. The point I'm trying to get to is that this guy snowed Harvard on the whole idea of getting off the gold standard in paper money and then pushing the engine of debt. Now, he was a useful idiot of the bankers, frankly. And he was given his tenure at Cambridge. He reminds me of some of the neo-Darwinists doing the same thing in these days. But he was the darling of the intelligentsia. But my whole point about Maynard Keynes, his thing is get off the gold thing, then you can guess what you can do. You can create unlimited money. What I'm fighting to sort of present here is that this is great, a real move of the magician's wand. But you always pay for it underneath. I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, that was the engine of the real serious national debt when people fell for the Keynesian economic plan. John Dewey was one of the people that got behind him, and several of the advisors of Roosevelt at Harvard got behind him, and some of the Harvard Law faculty. I can't remember the names quite yet.
Probably Morgenthau was one of them.
Yeah,
just
he was
a moment
one of them.
There. And,
yep. Yep.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Tal Brook. We're simply talking about what's happening to America, and Tal is talking about the financial straits that we're in today as a direct result of John Maynard Keynes' concepts, that, of course, you could create prosperity simply by printing money, get off the gold standard, print all the money you want to. You can create a tremendously prosperous society, and ladies and gentlemen, they have done exactly that.
Yeah, yep. It's theater magic, and you're really robbing people of their equity. And what I'm trying to say, I'm struggling to say now, is that's exactly what's happening right now. And one of the best illustrations I can give you is the plummeting dollar overseas. It's backed by nothing, and gold is going to keep going up. There's so many fronts right now that are redefining America, but we can certainly say the financial end of this thing is very serious. And as I've said, I personally believe one of the glues of the New World Order will be when all the nations are lined up and they owe more than they're worth, okay, then the big problem solver comes along and says, I've got a way we can work out of this, you know. And you can imagine this, right? When people triple mortgage their house, you no longer own it. You say, well, but we're going to work a way for you to, you're going to be a debt slave, but at least you get to live in your house for now.
No, but, you know, I got the mortgage broker called me just the other day. He said that most of what he is doing is adjustable rate mortgages. 1% for the first year, that's all you have to pay, 1% of whatever it is, and then for the next 5 years, a fixed rate of 7.5% a year.
Oh, boy.
1% now, 7.5% for the next 5 years, and then, of course, hang on to your hat. But, you know, it's amazing that this sort of thing is going on.
Yeah, and that's only one factor. I mean, we've talked about public education, we've talked about the entire pharmaceutical industry in earlier programs of literally putting chemicals in the water that affect people psychologically. Now the fact that the president wants to have every child psychiatrically tested, and that gives whoever does the testing godlike power to say, well, your son, we've decided your son needs to be on this chemical.
Ritalin. I think there are almost 6 million children on Ritalin today.
Yeah, there are. And then we see the move. Let me go through the list here. The signpost to slavery, abolition of private ownership of handguns. They've been trying to do that for a long time. Detention of individuals through the Patriot Act, and you can call them enemy combatants and put anyone in the slammer. That private financial transactions be keyed into Social Security numbers. And, of course, we've got the ID card right on the horizon. And there was a period of time that the only people who had to be checked traveling their own country were in the communist bloc of the Soviet Union. Well, that's coming to America. It's coming to Europe.
You know, one of the things that really frightens me most is the fact that there is no outcry because when the administration has recently announced that
yep.
they are going to put the people in Guantanamo
yep.
in prison for life, without trial, because they don't have enough evidence to convict them. They're not sure they're terrorists. They don't know much about these people. But since they don't know that they're not terrorists, they're going to put them in prison for life, and they have no right and no right to a trial.
Yeah.
Where is the outcry from?
Brother. No, and the people, the thing that worries me the most, maybe the most, is that we've seen milestone after milestone like this passed in the past 3 years, And with the people barely looking away from their television sets. This is what worries me. This is not like the raw-boned Americans during the great American Revolution. You know, when my relatives, my ancestors were working overtime. This is the passive, collective society that Orwell and Aldous Huxley talked about. This is where we're at. And this is where they're getting bolder and bolder.
You remember what Tuxley wanted to give everybody, a pill. It was called Soma.
That's right.
It would make them just sort of sleepy and passive.
That's a tranquilizer.
It almost does just about the same thing that fluoride in the water does.
Well, it's exactly correct. I mean, we've already got laws limiting the number of people allowed to meet in a private home in certain areas, and that's going to increase with the Patriot Act. It means you can't even have a prayer meeting. More and more passport regulations to get passports more difficult to obtain. They're going to make it tougher for you to move money overseas or take it money overseas.
I think very soon they're going to put on exchange controls. I think it's only a matter of time.
I do, too. I mean, these are all very big signs. Now, and I mentioned the attempt to restrict freedom of movement within the United States. Remember, only the Soviet Union had that, and the old red China. But with the identity card, that's what that's all about.
And the average American can't see it. We've got Matt calling in. He's been waiting patiently.
Okay, get Matt on the phone.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Great. Maybe we should all do what Warren Buffett has done, invest in...
In euros. Billions of dollars of euros.
Yeah, let's all invest. Hey, you know, he's the most successful investor of all...
He's actually invested in five different currencies, but at least I can tell you that quite a few billion dollars, up to $18 billion, is in euros alone. He's also put money into gold.
But I can also tell you he's the largest silver holder in the world. And
sure.
As of June of last year, he had shorted the American dollar to the tune of $19 billion, and he's done very well. He's done very well. He's probably made 10-20% on his money investment since last year, betting that the dollar is going to go down, and you know it's gone down, Matt. So I think if you follow and do what Warren Buffett has done, you'll do quite well.
Yeah.
Maybe this, Dr. Stan, is a way to rally people together and say, here's the benefits of our coming together. We're all going to do what Warren Buffett does, but then, on the side, we're gonna learn what the government has really been up to for all these years. In fact, I have a compendium from a guy out in Oregon, Des Griffin.
Right.
And it's quite old, but in this compendium,
Des Griffin. That is correct.
He has a publication,
it's called Emissary Publication.
Judges, Lawyers, and Other Destroyers. Every federal judge is a lawyer, so are most congressmen. So my question here, Dr. Stan and Powell, isn't it true that every single statutory de facto color of law public policy act that has ever been implemented was actually promulgated by British Accreditation Regency color of law agent actor extortionists? That's how I see them, because their allegiance... And it's a fact. Within the bar groups, it is known at the hierarchy that their allegiance is directly to the Bank of England, the Crown of England, and then the municipal corporations to which they are assigned or participate. So it isn't to their client. In fact, what I've learned, when anyone accepts a lawyer, they are at that moment presumed a legal lunatic and has no unalienable rights. They've all... been terminated at that point.
Okay, well, thanks. Right, we'll get Tal's
review
on that. Thanks
very
much, Matt.
Yeah, off the cuff, I can't verify that stuff. I've heard similar things. I would, I think Des Griffin wrote a book called Descent into Slavery.
Right.
And he's written some other books, too. And some of it's pretty well, frighteningly researched. And it's certainly about the move towards a new world order. He certainly goes into Illuminism and in the whole French Revolution thing with Weishaupt sending. He goes into all that stuff.
Well, let's go to Terry, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good evening, Tal.
Hi.
You touched on a couple subjects. I wanted to bring your attention to David Bay's Cutting Edge Ministries website.
Right, David does a fine job.
He has two real up-to-date articles on the mental health screening initiative.
Right.
And goes into detail about George Bush's new Freedom Commission on Mental Health.
Right.
And then dovetails it into his past being on the board of Eli Lilly and mm-hmm. Eli Lilly's involvement in all sorts of drugs.
Including, it's a bonanza for the pharmaceutical people.
Yes, well, it's it works hand in hand. It's basically your mental handcuffs on folks, right?
Well, you dumb down the populace, you turn them into mental cripples, and you collect
right.
billions on them.
Right.
And
well,
I think the right, rather frightening thing is that some of these drugs, after you've taken them, your brain is never quite the same again.
Can
have permanent results, at least. It may last for a good long period of time. So
and
I would be very, very concerned about getting onto psychotropic drugs, because the basis of whether it's Luvox or whether it's Prozac, these are all fluoride compounds. They're not open fluorides, but they're fluoride compounds. Fluoride has such a tremendous effect on the brain. That's why they put it in drinking water.
Yeah, it inculcates tremendous passivity.
Right. And it's amazing how culturally it has caught on as, well, you know, if you're unhappy, I mean, if you're complaining about something,
just drop a drink.
First thing they talk about is, you know, where's your medication?
Right. Well,
it's culturally part of the scene, and it's really frightening to read this article about how they now have the power to pick you up. In fact, David Bay has an article about a specific woman on the East Coast who was picked up, psychiatric hospital for a month, injected, and whatnot, who knows what, and...
Oh, you think that's bad? You ought to read the book Journey into Madness about Dr. Cameron, who was the head of the American Psychiatric Association, and what he did to actually patients in Canada, and they had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to people who they experimented on. Hey, we're going to keep
Cameron
going, though.
One of the Illuminati slave handler people that they often talk about, Kathy O'Brien. And
right, but they were not Illuminati, but they were CIA agents. Anyway, thanks so much, Terry. Oh, let's go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and give your thoughts here?
Well,
I think Terry's points are well made, and I recommend David Bay's website, but I really want to get your thoughts on what's going on.
Well, it's the ongoing problem. If you and I had a think tank, and we've talked about this before, of hyper-gifted people, and we were going to cover the entire terrain of what it would take to meld the so-called free nations into one, I can tell you that you look at contemporary history, and it's happened. It's been choreographed like a top Broadway play, frankly. I mean, they haven't missed a trick, from the financial end to the psychochemical end to the control media, and the people have been made passive, and you see what's happening to the currency.
And don't forget what's happening to the Christian church today.
Well, that above all. And the whole mockery of the faith, and the whole de-Christing the faith through useful tools like the different legal groups that have come into play to de-Christ every aspect, using the whole church-state so-called argument, which is bogus anyway. You know, the ACLU is the main kind of tool in this sort of thing, but there are other tools. We've seen political correctness come in with terrible force. We've seen John Dewey's My Pedagogic Creed reinvent public education to the point now that if parents of 40 years ago were to go into a public classroom now and see little Johnny learning about being a gender bender, their brains would fry in their skulls, and listening to the language of the kids. I mean, and there's the Hollywood aspect of changing America. There's the public television aspect of gradualism. There are so many sides to this thing that you'd have to be a super genius to put it together. And the point in my book, One World, and plenty of other books, in your book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, And some of the classics out there, is that if you want to have the world, I mean, that's the bottom line. If you want the real jewel, which is the whole planet, and of course people have wanted it from the time of Nimrod to the Roman emperors to Alexander the Great, obviously to Napoleon.
Don't forget Adolf.
Adolf, of course, and Stalin, and on and on, and players behind the scenes today who think it's going to happen real soon.
But I think the man, more than any other man, who's influencing what's going on in America and the world today is Cecil Rhodes.
Is who?
Cecil Rhodes.
Yeah, he's certainly one of them. I'm not sure the most, but he was definitely the power behind the round table groups in England around World War One, and he set up the Rhodes Scholarship.
But that became, of course, the round table became the Council on Foreign Relations.
Sure it did.
That's where it all ties together.
But he's one. I'd say he's one of a number of very powerful players. I'd say there are people behind them, but we're just guessing at this point. But the truth is, this thing has been choreographed, and what I try to point out in my book is to show the different ends from what's happened to psychology. Let's look at what happened from John Dewey into New Age education. What's happened to gender bending? Boy, why is marriages falling apart? How about this drugging of the culture? What about the demise of the dollar and getting off the gold currency to paper? What about national debt? We go on and on, and then you go into the history of some of these funded dynasties. The Bushes, of course, are among them. Rockefellers, Rothschilds, they're the big merchant bankers, but probably the most powerful players of all. That's what Carol Quigley said in his classic, Tragedy and Hope. The big players are the bankers who control money. It's the great quote about Lord Rothschild in the late 1800s, where he's, you know, where Rothschild is basically in the novel saying, you know, I care not who makes a nation's laws as long as I control the coining of its currency. And Benjamin Disraeli, of course, mentioned that in the novel he wrote, Coningsby. So on and on and on, and you have to look behind the shadows. If you're naive, if you're indifferent, if you don't care about the truth, if you're a yawner, you will never see this pattern until it catches you, you know, like a bear trap, and you cannot get out without sawing your leg off. That's where we're going. By the way, as I'm talking, you just blew my mind about 10 minutes ago, Stanley, with this thing about these prisoners that are over there.
Guantanamo, they're saying that they're going to put them in
jail. My brain is blown thinking. The earlier America would not have done that.
I know, of course.
Well, these are lifetime prisoners.
They're talking about putting them in prison for life without a trial because they don't have enough evidence to put them before a trial.
Folks that are listening, what happens if that's you? That's what I want you to think about as Stanley and I wind down.
Well, of course, we're going to take just three more minutes. But
and we're
going
to come back. We need to talk about that, folks. What happens when you're arrested?
The thing is, most Americans say, well, but those people are terrorists. Or they're Arabs. Or they're people who were captured in Afghanistan. There are enemies. Well, you know, ordinarily when a war is over, why, you release the enemies. Or at least you try them. How do they know that they're really enemies of America? A lot of them have been released, but many of them will be in prison for the rest of their life,
sure,
without a trial. And of course, they're there because they're enemies of the government. Could you be next? Well, our guest this evening, Tal Brook, and Tal, you've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up this evening's program.
Well, I tell you something. It just gets clear every time you and I do a show that we're rocketing towards a new world order. And it almost doesn't matter who's in the White House, who, you know, whether they claim to be liberal or conservative. This thing is like a giant locomotive on track. And the truth is, whether it's Bill Clinton doing his weird anti-moral stuff, or the new so-called conservative creating all kinds of terrorism, anti-terrorism legislation that really end runs around the Constitution. What I'm seeing happening is very, very sobering stuff. And perhaps the most sobering thing, though, is that we have a nation that is really like Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where they're For 1,001 reasons, they're emotionally dulled and they can't look up and see what's happening. And that's, yeah. If I've got an agenda and I want to create a slave state or I want to take over the world, these people are putty in the hands of a dictator. I mean, Stalin. What we have to remember is that this isn't idle jabber. We've had dictators. We've had Lenin. We've had Stalin. We've had Mao. Don't ever forget that. Please don't. Are there enough warnings in the Bible about dictators, for heaven's sakes? And we're told at some point in history one will come in which no one can stand against. And we seem to be rapidly moving towards that. And we've talked about the different vehicles that have allowed this to happen. Whether you're talking about the UN, whether you're talking about international treaties that really are more powerful than our constitutional laws if we accept them on their terms. We've seen wars change the face of the earth. We see the present so-called Middle Eastern thing changing landscape and creating, of course, national debt, as America has never had. But what it's really done, of course, the real problem with 9/11 is getting people to accept anything for security, including things like the Patriot Act. So, I mean, it's like a giant con job. We see technology like RFID chips that allow anybody, anywhere to be monitored anytime. The RFID chip, the radio frequency tags, can now be injected. They're right-sized, and a geosynchronous satellite will know where you are every second of the day. You happy about that?
Tom, we're out of time. We could go on.
We could go on forever.
Well, I guess this evening has been Tal Brook, of course, one of my favorite guests. Tal, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's great.
And hope to get you on our other programs, talking to our other audiences. And I share with you your concern, but understanding that what we're seeing in the manifestations of this spiritual battle that's been here for a long time, and I think it's coming to a climax very soon.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with you.
God bless you. Thanks
so
much.
Okay, God bless.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was Tal Brook, and that, of course, brings me to a discussion of a couple of videos we're carrying. They're called Megiddo 1, March to Armageddon, by Chris Pinto. 2 hours and 15 minutes of the story of the prophecies, and, of course, the ancient prophecies of the Bible, and then Nostradamus and Casey, but they really were prophets that didn't have the full story. But, of course, the Bible does have the full story, and you can actually see so many of the things were prophesied coming to pass today. And then, of course, you bring it into World War One and World War Two, yes, and World War Three. And World War Three is really upon us, and nobody knows that. Megiddo 1, The March to Armageddon, is a wonderful video to show to the Bible studies, to show to anybody as a Christian and people who aren't Christians, because it'll get them beginning to think as they begin to see the biblical background for what's going on today. And then Megiddo 2, of course, takes you from the day of creation right up to where we are today, and I have a little part in that where I talk about the Georgia Guidestones, where we talk about Madame Blavatsky, and of course you've got Dave Hunt and Carol Matriciana and Kent Hovind. A great, great video. That's actually 3 hours long, Megiddo 2. And then it was to put a lot of this together, why it would be they sold their souls for Rock and Roll series. You can get the 3-hour series, the 4-hour series, the 10-hour series. We're actually moving more of the 10-hour than we are of any of the others, and I will tell you that the people who've seen the full any of these have really been taken, really been shocked. I suggest the 4-hour to show to your friends and relatives, but if you really want to get into a great deal of detail, and my wife actually got into the first tape, a video of the 10-hour, they sold their souls for rock and roll, this is really phenomenal. And, of course, if you really want to understand that we are in a spiritual battle, there are people who have actually sold their souls to the devil. This whole thing is satanic. It was coordinated, certainly, by the satanic organizations, by people like Aleister Crowley and his disciples, Timothy Leary, Alfred Kinsey, Hugh Hefner, and all of these people. They don't mention Hugh Hefner specifically, but they do mention Harry Hay, who formed the gay liberation movement. There's a spiritual component behind the drugs, behind the sexual promiscuity, behind homosexuality. And until you recognize there's a spiritual component behind everything, you can't understand anything going on. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest Tal Brook's books, Both of them are excellent. One World, of course, is a rewrite of When the World Will Be as One, but a great deal of new information and pictures, and I think it's an outstanding book. That's why we carry it. Tal's other book, The Avatar of Night, his story of his pilgrimage to India, of course, working with Sai Baba, and, of course, eventually coming to realize that he was not going to be the disciple of a new wonderful religion that was going to transform America, coming here as Sai Baba's representative, but a representative of demonic forces. And that's where Tal became a Christian, and you heard him on the program tonight. Again, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness Special, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then let me suggest you go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there. You can listen to our archive programs. We do carry the Berkey water filter, which will take the fluoride out of your water. If you're interested in looking into that, you can read about it on our website or call us at 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.